Hello, and welcome to the ParaUnity Podcast. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a location that is growing in reputation. Its history and lore is captivating, and the new show on the History Channel is opening up new dialogues about the place in many paranormal and occult circles. From UFOs to poltergeist to extreme random spikes of magnetic fields and radiation, this place has it all. We will, of course, be talking about the one and only Skinwalker Ranch. Joining us tonight, not only to discuss the ranch, but the show on history, is our dear friend of the show, paranormal investigator and paranormal blogger from OC Ghosts and Legends, Anthony Holter. Also joining us is the chief investigator and assistant state director of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, in Southern California. He is a member of the MUFON Star Team, as well as a member of the Experiencer Research Team. Please welcome Earl Gray. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us this evening. How are you both doing tonight?
Doing great, Brandon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Earl?
Doing great. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks for asking me on.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying in the intro, this will be a pretty exciting episode. There's been a lot of crazy reports of many different things going on at this place. Skinwalker Ranch, also known as Sherman Ranch, is a property located on approximately 512 acres southeast of Ballard, Utah. The ranch is reputed to be the site of paranormal and UFO-related activities. Its name is taken from the skinwalkers of the Navajo legend concerning a vengeful shaman. But before going into the details of the ranch, maybe we should talk a little bit about the skinwalkers themselves. In Navajo culture, a skinwalker is a type of a harmful witch who has the ability to turn into, possess, or disguise themselves as an animal. The term is never used when discussing their healers. While perhaps the most common variety seen in horror fiction by non-Navajo people, the legend of the skinwalkers is not well understood outside of the Navajo culture, mostly due to reluctance to discuss the subject with outsiders, or them even wanting to discuss it at all amongst anybody that they don't trust. Now, Navajo witches, including skinwalkers, represent the antithesis of Navajo cultural values, while community healers and cultural workers are known as medicine men and women, witches are seen as evil, performing twisted ceremonies and manipulating magic in a perversion of the good works medicine people traditionally perform. In order to practice their good works, traditional healers learn about both good and evil magic. Most can handle the responsibility, but some people kind of become corrupt and choose to become witches. The animals that are associated with this witchcraft usually include tricksters such as the coyote, but can include other creatures, usually those associated with like death or bad omens. They might also possess living animals or people and walk around in their bodies by locking their eyes with them. And the skinwalkers can be male or female. Now, Anthony, you've talked to me a lot outside of the show about skinwalkers. It's kind of a little, I don't want to say obsession of ours, but it's definitely a topic we discuss a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's kind of your thoughts on these?
It's probably the most strange and fascinating, even lore, if you will, that I've heard of in a long time. Previously, as we've discussed, with Black Star Canyon, which is also Native American territory, out in Cali, I had a few guests on the last tour mention to me about skinwalkers being there as well. So I think, too, a lot of it's like a cultural thing between a lot of the Native American tribes that have come. And, you know, the fact that any decimation to anything, they're going to put a curse of some type on the land. And I think that's what it really comes down to is, you know, it's a strong belief. So many people, they won't talk about it. It's taboo. Or if you do, then, you know, you just had an X put on you to, you know, cross you out for death. So there's so much evolving around the Skinwalker story and the lore, and a lot of reports, more reports than I've seen from any other type of legend or lore. So it's really quite fascinating.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Now, Earl, you're coming from the other side of it. I mean, Anthony's more paranormal, ghosts, that type of stuff, where you come into this mostly from the UFO side, you know, with all your involvement with MUFON. Now, do you guys get any kind of conflicting or maybe adjoining types of reports of anything that's kind of related to skinwalkers with MUFON, or is it something that you just kind of get a little bit coming from the story of this place?
Well, you know, that Native Americans and extraterrestrial creatures, there's a really interesting sort of they go together. You know, literally every single tribe in Mesoamerica, in the Americas themselves, up into Alaska and Canada, the one thing that you'll find in common with every single Native American tribe is that they believe that their ancestors came down from the sky. They believe in the sky people. And the Hopi Indians, which are kind of close to the Navajo tribe, they have the whole, you know, the Kachinas, which is sort of like in Greek mythology, you have Apollo and you have all the different gods. And this is synonymous with that sort of thing. You know, it's their pantheon. So the idea that wisdom and civilization, things that, you know, sort of like Prometheus bringing fire to humanity to kind of jumpstart civilization, is very much so part of the American Indian tradition. And just as you have, you know, the Kachinas that come from the sky that bring wisdom and that bring civilization, language, and things like this, you also have the flip side of that, the dark side, which would be the skinwalkers, and which is prominent in the Navajo tradition, although you see that in other Native American tribes as well. The Navajo really truly believe in skinwalkers, to the point where if somebody passes away in their hogan, which is their little hut that they live in traditionally, they'd burn the hogan down. They wouldn't want to deal with that area because there's the risk of skinwalkers coming in after death. You know, it goes way back in their tradition, thousands of years, you know, back to the Anasazis, the ancient ones that were the original tribe that many of the other Southwest Indian tribes originated from. It's an old tradition. It's an old story. And, you know, it goes along with the star people, the sky people. So I think it's very relevant to ufology as well as to paranormal assets.
Sure. Okay. Well, the ranch itself is located in the West Uintah County, bordering the Ute Indian Reservation. It was popularly dubbed the UFO Ranch due to its crazy 50-year history of odd events that have said to have been taking place. Now, the investigators saw or found evidence of close to 100 incidents that included vanishing and mutilated cattle, sightings of identified flying objects or orbs, large animals with piercing red eyes that they said were unscathed when struck by bullets, and invisible objects emitting destructive magnetic fields. Now, among those involved with these investigations, one that I really want to mention was retired U.S. Army Colonel John B. Alexander. So this gives you a really good idea that, you know, it's not just your everyday people that are just out looking for a thrill. This is, like, serious stuff that they're investigating. Now, the cattle mutilations, they've been a part of the folklore of the surrounding area for decades. So when NIDSCI founder billionaire Robert Bigelow purchased the ranch, he paid $200,000 for this. It was reported that the result of his being convinced by the stories of these mutilations that included the tales of strange lights and unusual impressions made in the grass and soil, was told to him by the family of the former ranch owner, Terry Sherman. Now, the ranch It takes its name from the shape-shifting witches, and it was the first homesteaded by the Myers family back in 1905. The first homestead consisted of a few small buildings on the northwest corner of the ranch at the foot of Skinwalker Ridge. Later, the original homestead was abandoned, and the Myers established a new home on the eastern side of the ranch. By the 1930s, it was occupied still by the same family. It was by Kenneth John Myers and his wife Edith Child Myers. They stayed on the property till about 1987, so they had the property for a long time. And during their occupancy, they made no reports of any strange occurrences, but some of their neighbors did. But in the meantime, other unusual events began to occur in the Uintah Basin, especially in the 1950s. Numerous reports of unidentified flying objects, and this continued throughout the next several decades. Interestingly, these were not the first reports of strange aircraft in the sky. The earliest mentioned dates date all the way back to the 1700s, when Spanish explorers in search of the Spanish Trail passed through the Uintah Basin and reported seeing craft in the sky over their campfires at night. So the UFO reports, they number in the hundreds, including strange fireballs and aircraft that range in size from 20 to 30 feet across to as large as the size of a football field. They're described variously as round, oval, cigar-shaped, and triangular. Now, Earl, do you guys have different classifications for the different types of UFO reports?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, it's real strange. Over at the Skinwalker Ranch, I mean, the one UFO report that stands out to me is one from when Bigelow still owned the area. They said that it looked like a flying refrigerator and that it had a window on top that you could see beings inside of this thing. And it just it traveled like it was mostly flying maybe 6 feet above the ground. Rectangular UFO, but traveling straight up and down like a refrigerator, you know, would be sitting in the corner of your kitchen. And, you know, they've had a lot of different UFO sightings there. I know that more recently they've had the football-shaped, very bright lights that they've seen over on that ridge. The same ridge, you know, it's the Skinwalker Ridge where they've had what looks like searchlights shooting off into the sky. And that whole ridge seems to light up in infrared as well. It's not necessarily lighting up with, you know, visuals where you can see with your eyes, but you use an infrared camera and the whole place is lit up like a city was there. So it's very, very strange. And the UFOs that they've seen over the area kind of run the gamut from classic saucer shapes, football shapes, to the refrigerator that was flying 6 feet off the ground, which I really would have loved to have seen that one, you know.
Well, as long as I had beer in it, I mean.
That too, yeah. Yeah, they're kind of far away from any convenience store over there. That's the other thing. It's in the middle of nowhere, you know, Uinta Basin is not close to any, you know, I guess the Ute tribe is the reservation there. It's the closest civilization that you can find. Middle of nowhere, where a lot of UFO activity seems to happen.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it happens for a reason because it's out in the middle of nowhere. So that way they don't have people bothering them while they do whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm. It seems like they don't want to be observed unless they want to be observed. They certainly don't want to be documented unless they want to be documented. You've got, you know, this history of batteries just draining suddenly in the area, which happens around paranormal stuff, too. You have, say, a poltergeist situation. Oftentimes it will drain your iPhone, so you can't take video or photographs. It'll drain the batteries from your EMF monitor. That's very well known and documented in paranormal studies and as well as in close encounters with UFOs.
Oh yeah, that's one of the jokes that we have, and I'm sure Anthony can agree with me, is when you get into paranormal investigating, you should probably buy stock in Rayovac and Duracell.
Absolutely. No doubt. Have extra battery packs at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, we had one place that we investigated here just recently that not only did it drain the battery in our video camera, but it drained the backup batteries as well. So,
oh, there you go.
So, I mean, it was just like, well, you don't want to be seen tonight. It's kind of like, you know, dealing with a teenager. But
then maybe we are dealing with juvenile delinquent aliens or ghosts. Right. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, these crafts that they're reporting, you know, some are surrounded by glowing green light. Others emitted wavy red beams, and others appeared to shoot colored lights from their underbellies. But by the 1970s, the Utah Highway Patrol was getting so many UFO calls that the troopers completely stopped filling out reports. And at the same time, the local ranchers also began to report bizarre cattle mutilations. So a retired science teacher named Joseph Hicks, he goes by Junior, he was from Roosevelt, Utah, and he investigated more than 400 UFO sightings in the Uintah Basin. So he found that the UFO appearances often coincided with cattle mutilations. So over the years, many of the eyewitnesses saw living beings in the windows or portholes of the UFOs. So, I mean, that would definitely, definitely grab your attention if you could see the creatures actually in the ships.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
So strange.
Yeah.
And they can't find no footprints around the carcasses. The blood is drained from the bodies. They usually would, very strange. They would find either the rectum or the eyes would be cored out. Just really, really high. I mean, we call it high strangeness in ufology, and there's no better term for it. It's just so highly strange. And why are they, what's going on? Why are they doing this? You know, it's just it's such a weird thing.
And here's kind of the thing that kind of caught my attention with some of the stuff that they do, like especially like around the rectum and stuff like that. You know, I don't know if either of you guys are big hunters, but when you're out there field dressing animals after you go hunting and you're cutting them up to clean them up, you know, you take all that stuff out like that.
But yeah, absolutely.
You don't leave the meat. And I mean, why go and get yourself your own cow out there when you have stores you can go to? I mean, back in the 80s and the 70s, 60s, even the 50s, they had grocery stores. They had places they could go to get meat. You know, there's plenty of lockers around. So it's just, I always thought it was kind of weird that it kind of almost sounds like somebody field dressing an animal. But does that mean that they were going to come back and take them later? And we just happen to find it and remove it?
Right. They never come back. They never come back for the carcass.
Exactly.
It's always just left there.
Exactly.
Now, maybe they're taking the blood to check for radiation levels. You got to remember that the Uinta Basin is right in the path of where they were blowing up the atomic bombs back in the 50s and 60s. And apparently a lot of, you know, that's the direction that the radiation was blowing in, was towards this area. So some people have the hypothesis that maybe our visitors are checking the animals for radiation levels, just because, you know, it's either that or, you know, pick up a homeless person and never return them. Well, maybe that happens too. I don't know. Some people think so. But that's one idea behind the cow mutilations, is perhaps it's actually a good thing that they're checking up on that for our, you know, purposes, you know, that hopefully we're going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to say that, you know, any alien that comes to Earth or comes to our realm is here to reenact Independence Day. I mean, there could very well be studying us and trying to help other civilizations survive.
I'm kind of a zoo theorist. I think they're watching us, that they're scientists, and that we're interesting, that we're nearly intelligent in their eyes, that we're sort of on the cusp of intelligence, but we're still barbaric. We still fight amongst ourselves, have wars and such, and so that interests them. You know, we're sort of at that point where we're almost ready to make that leap into outer space. And you have to figure we're eventually going to be a threat to these guys. You know, they live in outer space, and that's where we appear to be headed. So they're very interested in us, and so they're you know, scientists and, you know, people that are psychologists and whatever the aliens call that. They're kind of watching us carefully.
Yeah,
well, it's part of that. Maybe
I'm sure it's a good show to watch too.
Especially now, you know.
Yeah,
things are really weird. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, after the Myers vacated the ranch in 1987, it stood empty for 7 years before it was purchased by Terry and Gwen Sherman in 1994. Now the couple moved in with their two children and livestock. And they were surprised to find that the previous owners had placed deadbolt locks on all the doors and windows, including those inside the house. Some of these had deadbolts on both the inside and the outside of the house. Now, even the kitchen cabinets had bolts on them. And at both ends of the house, wow, iron stakes and heavy chains had been installed, which the Shermans guessed were used by the previous tenants for, like, large guard dogs. So I don't know.
That could be, or maybe the tenants were gonna try to alien hunt themselves somehow.
I don't know, but it really makes you kind of think what was going on if they didn't report anything,
right,
but they had to bolt the insides and the outsides of the doors every time they left a room or entered a room.
Right, and I noticed too, like a lot of the accounts and even in the show, someone always has a dog. You know, whether it's stationed, you know, on the very front of the property, on the guard post that they have or whatever, for, you know, early security warning. So, you know, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is. And then also, going along with this, the very day they took possession, the family spotted a large coyote, or, I mean, it could have been a wolf. It was just a very large canine creature in one of their pastures, which came up close to them and made its way right into their livestock pen. It then grabbed a calf by the nose and tried to drag it out through the bars of the corral. Now, Terry Sherman and his father began to beat the animal to make it release the calf, but it wouldn't let go. So when that failed, Terry went into the house, got a gun, came back out, and shot the animal with a .357 Magnum at point-blank range. And I mean, I don't know how familiar listeners are with the guns, but think .357 Magnum, think Dirty Harry. I mean, that thing,
yeah,
that thing's got some kick and that thing's got some muscle. I mean, it goes. But still, this animal held onto the calf. So he shot it again. And then it released the calf and it just stood there looking at him like, what? What are you going to do? So after a few more shots, I think it was 4 or 5 shots in total, the animal ended up just walking away. It didn't limp, didn't do nothing, just turned around and walked off. So amazingly, there was no blood or sign of injury to the animal.
Wow.
The men then followed the tracks of the animal for about a mile, where they just suddenly ended as if it just vanished along the side of the creek. This was just the first foreshadowing of the events that are going to follow. So a few weeks later, when Gwen was in her car, she saw another wolf or canine creature that was so large, its back was parallel with the top of her window of the car. So now think of this, guys. So this thing is on all fours, and the back of it is as high as the top of the car windows.
Wow.
That,
no such animal.
Right.
Right.
Not on Earth now. Not right now. Dire wolves back in the Ice Age were that big.
Yeah. Well, just imagine the size of the poop you'd have to clean up.
No, thank you.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
But now this large, we'll just call it a wolf, but this large wolf was accompanied by another dog-like animal that she couldn't identify. So there's two of those creatures.
Oh, my God.
So over the next 2 years, the Shermans, as well as their neighbors, reported seeing a number of strange animals in the area. And these were all sorts of weird stuff. So, like, they included, like, exotic multicolored birds that aren't native to the region at all. And then tall, dark beasts that were almost similar to, like, a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch. So, I don't know how they live there. I mean, honestly, guys. So, right. You move in, you have this wolf, you're blasting its face off with a handgun. It's just looking at you like you're wasting its time. The thing's the size of your car. And then now you're seeing all these other animals. I mean, the birds, okay, birds, yeah, that's fine. But then you got stuff like Sasquatch? I mean, I'd be finding a realtor pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Apparently they did.
Yeah. Well, it took them a while.
As far as big as the property is, too, I mean, it's just that's just crazy. I wonder where, like, specifically, I know they were talking on the show about some of the really, like, the hot spots, like the Homestead 2, number 2, and then over by the ridge. So I wonder particularly where a lot of these reports and incidents have taken, if it was kind of in those general little hot spots.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I'm familiar with it because I've, you know, Google snooped out the ranch and did my Google map investigation of the place. But it looks like back behind Homestead 2 area, there's a tree line that runs back almost kind of parallel with the ridge. And I'm wondering if they didn't see a lot of that in that tree line there, because they talk a lot about, you know, like dogs and stuff running off into that tree line going down towards like the creek or the river or whatever it is. And so maybe it's there. And I mean, maybe there's some kind of, you know, electromagnetic alignment with the way the trees are running with the water. Or I don't know.
Right. Exactly. A lot of possibilities.
Yeah. So on one occasion, the Shermans saw a really strange hyena-like creature attacking one of their horses. Now, which they described this as low to the ground, it was heavily muscled, and probably weighed about 200 pounds. Now, the weird part is it had curly red hair and a bushy tail. So, I mean, I've never seen a hyena, one, getting up to 200 pounds, or two, having curly red hair and a bushy tail. I mean...
Nope.
You know, maybe
there are no zoos nearby.
No.
For anything like that to escape from. Right, I mean, it sounds exactly. A little bit like the Tasmanian tiger almost, but that's Tasmania, you know, the Australian coast. So, yeah, I mean, these things are – they don't really have any reference to our world.
Exactly.
To me, I mean, it really truly sounds like there's some sort of portal that's been opened up there. Who knows, you know, perhaps it was the original Navajo. I know that the Ute Indians originally took the Navajo tribe as slaves for a while, and that was the origin of the curse. That they cursed the area because of the Ute Indians that had taken them as slave workers. But whatever it was, you know, somebody tapped into something really bad apparently, and opened up this you know, probably multiple portals. You know, it sounds like perhaps the different homesteads were points of power. I don't know if there are ley lines that run through this area. I would guess so.
Yeah, I would assume.
You know, there's some kind of an energy generator thing that's going on. Mm-hmm. And but they're, you know, these are not creatures that are seen on Earth. They're simply not here. They're creatures of myth. They're creatures from our, you know, prehistoric history. So something extraordinary is going on there. It's not something there's no hyenas that are, you know, escaping from some zoo out in the middle of right. Southwest Utah desert. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then the really weird part about this is Terry Sherman approached this animal, and it vanished right in front of his eyes. So afterward, he checked the horse, and he found that it did have numerous claw marks on its legs. So, and then a few months later after that, a neighbor actually reported seeing the same similar beast running across their property. So it's not like it's just staying on the ranch. It's getting to all their neighbors, too. So
right.
The Shermans, like their neighbors, also saw strange lights and flying objects. This included more than a dozen on one evening. On many of the occasions that they spied these UFOs, they also experienced death or disappearance of 7 of their best cows. So now 4 disappeared without a trace, and 3 more were found dead and partially mutilated. So now, like Earl was saying, one of these dead cows had a peculiar hole in the center of its left eyeball, but was otherwise untouched. So then another was found with a similar hole in its left eye, and then a 6-inch hole about an inch deep had been carved out of its rectum. So now the last cow to be killed and mutilated had been seen alive by the Sherman's son just about 5 minutes earlier. Now this one had a 6-inch wide, about 18-inch deep hole cored out of its rectum that extended into the body cavity. Now, in all 3 cases, there was no traces of blood found, and there was a weird chemical odor present. And there was no evidence of predators, footprints, or tire tracks.
How about that?
Right, that's crazy.
And no helicopters in the area.
No helicopters.
You hear any noisy rotors from a helicopter going.
Yep.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
How do you explain this?
Yeah. I agree. And then of the cattle that disappeared, one of them seemed to have been magically lifted from out of the snow. So its hoof prints led into a field and then just simply stopped. The ground was littered with broken twigs and branches, and the tops of the trees appeared to have been cut off. So that means something had to have come down to grab it.
Right.
And I'm assuming, and I mean, I don't know, maybe Earl, you've heard of UFOs like this, that maybe like the outside circle of it rotates almost like a rotor? I don't know.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, you know, Linda Moulton Howe kind of, she sort of found her voice originally with the cow mutilations that were going on. And, you know, this isn't just going on in Utah. Colorado has a long history. We have cattle mutilations in California as well. You know, we've had, reports come into MUFON about this exact same phenomenon. You don't see footprints from people. They are completely exsanguinated. There's no blood left in the body. There's, you know, as you were saying, the rectum is either cored out or an eye is cored out. Soft tissue, sometimes the tongue is taken out. Three specific spots, you know, the tongue, the eye, the rectum. No blood, exsanguinated, and the meat of the animal is left behind. So it's not some predatory beast that's looking for a meal. If it was a predator, then it would take the body. There would be a skeleton left there. And in these specific cases that happen over and over and over again, there's just the blood is completely gone. There's no footprints. And it's just so anomalous, just the strangest thing in the world. Lord have mercy.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, other strange events were also happening during the years that they lived on the ranch. So the pastures would unexplainably light up at night. There were sounds of heavy machinery that could be heard that seemed to be operating underneath the earth. Then we also had poltergeist types of activities that were occurring, such as items disappearing only to reappear at a later time, and they were hearing strange disembodied voices. So, but the weird part about these voices is they were often speaking in a different language. They were also heard from up above. And then we also had crop circles of flattened grass that were found on the ranch. So, I mean, that, like I said, they really run the gamut of all this.
I hadn't heard they had crop circles. That's interesting. So they had, were they full on like designs, or was it like the UFO nests, like the round shaped ones?
I think they were actually the round shaped ones. I did see reports.
Since like a landing site.
But I didn't hear anything in detail about them. So.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That's cool. I didn't know about that. What do you know?
Yeah. Now, one of the other things that was talked about, I actually, a friend of yours, Anthony, Dave, was talking to someone that was on the ranch on one of his episodes of his show, and the person actually was talking about, I think it was actually Mr. Sherman himself, was on the show, but he was talking about a time when he actually saw one of the creatures, the alien creatures, in the house trying to take his wife.
Oh, right.
And he, this is the part where it gets a little crazy. He pulled out a samurai sword that he had as a decoration in the house and chopped the arm off this alien creature.
Ah!
And he kept the arm, but within, I don't remember the time frame, but within a certain amount of time, the arm itself vanished, as well as the blood that was left on the sword. It all essentially evaporated.
Right. Yeah, I remember hearing about that too.
Yeah, so you'd think if you cut off a limb off a creature, it would stick around, especially because I think he put it in a case. Because, I mean, you know, you cut off a tip of your finger or something, that thing doesn't go anywhere. It's just, it's there. So, I mean, I don't know. And that's one of the problems that Terry Sherman was having with when they came out and started talking about this was some of the stuff is just so hard to believe that people just looked at him like he was crazy. But...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's got to be hard. I mean, you read through what happened, and you're just like, there's no way. But, right. You know, now with what's going on with the show, and you're starting to see some of this crazy stuff happening, it really kind of makes you go, well, maybe. But anyways, the final straw occurred one evening in May of 1996 when Sherman was outside with his three of his dogs. And he noticed a blue orb that was darting around in a field near the ranch house. So he urged his dogs to go after it. I don't know why, but the dogs chased and barked at the orb as they followed it into some thick brush and trees. Now Sherman heard the three of them start making these terrible yelps, and when he called for them, they didn't respond. So the next morning, when he went to look for the dogs, all he found was three greasy lumps of what appeared to be like on a scorched spot. So like they were just like a greasy burnt stain on the ground.
Jeez.
And the dogs were never seen again.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. It's probably a good thing he didn't go after the dogs right away, because there'd probably been four of them little spots. So.
Oi.
I mean, have you guys had reports of anybody being attacked like that? With MUFON?
Well, there was one strange UFO incident that went on for a while. It happened in Colares, Mexico, I believe, where people were being attacked by UFOs, and they would actually hover over people and they would shoot them with a beam weapon. And there were a few people that were killed. There were some people that wound up with terrible burns in hospitals. It's just a very, very strange story. But if you look it up, if you Google the Colares, Colores UFO incident, it'll come up for you. Usually you don't have stuff like that. Generally, you know, when people have contact situations, they may have it may scare them, because that, you know, of course, you know, people are generally paralyzed by their visitors. They could be taken to a craft, have medical experiments done on them. The whole thing is it'll totally, you know, pull the sheet out from under your sense of reality. And that's what Dr. John Mack used to call it, was ontological shock, is what people would go through when they would have a UFO encounter. But it's usually not something malevolent like that. But, you know, the Colares UFO flap was like a malevolent thing. People were being hurt and killed. It's very, very strange. So that's the only one that I know of that comes to mind right off. You know, there have been a couple of Air Force pilots that have taken chase after UFOs who have disappeared or have crashed. But it's not the real common story. Usually people are told, you're going to be okay. We're going to be gone in a few minutes. This is important for humanity and for us. And then they're left as they were found. But it's not always, you know, E.T. Reese's Pieces, you know, sometimes you may be left in pieces, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know? my encounter would probably be, instead of Reese's Pieces, and like you said, it would probably be hysterical screaming and crying and a pee puddle underneath me.
it's scary. I've had a weird encounter in my life, and it was very, very scary. It was not what I was expecting. It was not Space Brothers. You know, you're paralyzed. You can't do anything about it. They get what they want and they leave, you know. But that's usually the way it goes. They get what they want and they leave. It's the odd story where people are hurt or killed, but there are stories that are out there that and there's evidence behind it. It's not just a story. The Colares UFO flap did happen, and it wasn't a friendly thing.
Yeah, I'm starting to think maybe on the ParaUnity podcast website, maybe we should make a spot on there where you listeners can go on there and they can print out a UFO consent form. That way they have that consent form just in case, you know, this gets too real. So
I don't know who's going to sign it on the other end, but yeah, you know, I mean,
well, it's just so crazy. Like, some of these stories are, you know, so far fetched, and you have yet the whole opposite end of the spectrum where there's a lot of consistency in the stories from a variety of different people. And that's what makes it so fascinating. I mean, Skinwalker Ranch really does have everything that you can think of as far as supernatural, anomalous, you know, UFOs, paranormal. So
yeah,
it's a smorgasbord.
It is.
Exactly. It really is.
The one thing, I mean, coming from my background in the paranormal, and Anthony, you may agree with me, is I wish that they would cover more of that paranormal, because they talk about seeing shadow people and they talk about seeing ghosts, but they don't ever really cover anything.
One thing that's consistent with all good UFO reports, and, you know, I get a lot of them, you know, Southern California, we have more UFO reports than anywhere else in the world. And they're not all great reports. You know, you know, a lot of them are, you know, people reporting, you know, the Mylar balloons spinning in the breeze with the sun flashing on it, you know, and stuff like that. But we do have some very, very good reports. You know, we're close to a lot of aerospace industry, a lot of military stuff out here, and all that stuff is like a magnet for UFO activity. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I've noticed that's consistent through all good UFO reports is that there is always an element of absurdity in there, that it'll all make sense and it'll look like something that would knock Carl Sagan's socks off. You know, it's just, everything is just scientific down the line. And then suddenly, and then the thing, you know, it disappeared in a pop, and, you know, there will be some ridiculousness about it. But I think that that's a part of the phenomena, is that it has this built in absurdity to just kind of, it's almost like it's just flipping us off in our idea of you know, we sort of have this idea of what normal is and what physics is, and mm-hmm. and how things, you know, if you throw something at the wall, it's going to break. It's not going to get better, right? But it's almost like it's nudge, 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 wink, wink. You know, this is not you know, your world. This is not the way that you think of things. And we are in control here. There's always that element of absurdity. And it's in every really good UFO case, you know. And I've seen it, you know. I mean, I personally closed over 500 different UFO cases myself. And they always, the good ones always have some absurd thing to them that ruins it. If you wanted to take it to a scientist and say, hey, look, this is a smoking gun. Well, they're going to see this silly thing, you know. Well, they had like these, you know, skin tight silver suits and these, you know, round, you know, space helmets from a 1950s movie. It's like, I don't want that to be in there, but there it is, you know? And it's almost like the phenomena just like is sort of laughing at us or laughing at our idea of the way that we think of as what normal is and what reality is. So there's always that. So Skinwalker Ranch kind of falls into that paradigm where, you know, it's just all this scientific stuff, but then there's this absurd stuff, you know, this a dire wolf, you know, or, you know, a flying refrigerator. It's crazy, but there it is, you know, it's there ensconced in all of this evidence. And if it was any other phenomena or any other thing, it would be unequivocal. People would be lining up and saying, oh, this is true. This is real. And wow, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So now 2 years after these events happened to the Shermans, they began to speak out publicly about everything. So now the first claims about these unusual events was first appeared in the Salt Lake City, Utah Desert News. And then later, in the alternative weekly, Las Vegas Mercury, it was put in as a series of articles by journalist George Knapp. George Knapp and co-author Colm Kelleher subsequently authored a book in which they detail the early investigations into alleged UFO sightings in the Uintah County region. The vanishing and mutilating of cattle, large animals with piercing red eyes that were not injured when struck by bullets, and then possible objects emitting destructive magnetic fields, crop circles, Bigfoot-like creatures, and then also the poltergeist activity. So, if you ever want to get into a very interesting read, go check out that book by George Knapp and Colm Kelleher.
Mm-hmm.
So now,
excellent book. Excellent book.
Yeah, it really is. Now, the Shermans, they planned on selling the property. However, before they got the chance to, Mr. Robert Bigelow, a millionaire businessman and a believer in ufology, and founder of the National Institute for Discovery Science, offered to buy the property after he read about the events in the newspaper. So now Bigelow bought the ranch for $200,000, contingent on a non-disclosure agreement with the Shermans, who agreed to not talk any further about the events on the ranch. He then began to establish a compound with high-tech sensing equipment, PhD-level field investigators, scientists, and security detail which guarded the property 24 hours a day. Now, these investigators were tasked with collecting evidence, interviewing witnesses, and searching for answers. So now, its purpose was to research and advance the study of various fringe sciences and paranormal topics, including UFOs and cattle mutilation. But with little apparent success, the National Institute of Discovery Science ended up becoming disbanded in 2004. However, the organization was quickly replaced by the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies, which was more secretive and was apparently working towards having a government sponsor. So in 2007, the Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program was a secret investigatory effort funded by the United States Defense Department to study unidentified flying objects, primarily on Skinwalker Ranch. So in the next several years, $22 million were spent on the program, which investigated reports of unidentified flying objects and was run by a military intelligence officer, Luis Elizondo, from the Pentagon. Now, this shadowy program was largely funded at the request of Harry Reid, the Nevada Democrat who was the Senate Majority Leader at the time and who has a long interest in space phenomena, and he's also a longtime friend of Robert Bigelow. This information, however, was not publicly known at the time until it was released by the New York Times in 2017. So when the story broke, a Department of Defense official confirmed that the government-funded program, and Senator Harry Reid admitted his complicity. So now today, parts of the study remain classified, and the Department of Defense has never officially acknowledged the existence of the program. But interestingly, it does admit that the program was shut down in 2012. That year, Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies lost its funding from the Department of Defense as the Advanced Aviation Threat Identification Program contract expired and was not renewed. This was primarily due to Louise's explanation that officials feared the public might learn about the program and see it as a misappropriation of funds. So now, this is interesting that they didn't want to admit to this, but as I know, and I know Earl knows, the government just came out and released a very important piece of information. Isn't that right, Earl?
Oh, yeah. They said that the Pentagon has said that the three videos that the STARS Academy put out back in January 2017, I think it was, or it's December 2017, that they are real UFOs, that they weren't ours, that as far as we know, they are not from Russia or China. We certainly hope they're not, because the Tic Tac UFO, which was documented over here off of Catalina Island, it was traveling at Mach 18. I mean, it was 18 times the speed of sound. It should have caused 18 different sonic booms. It should have been boom, 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 boom. And then it was taking 90-degree turns without becoming a fireball. Anything traveling that fast would create a fireball. It would cause multiple sonic booms. It would be a disaster. You certainly couldn't have a crew or a pilot in that thing, because they would become jelly on the side of it. But somehow or another, this object was traveling that fast and doing things that do not comply with Newton's laws of thermodynamics. It should have been a fireball. It should have exploded. But it was under intelligent control. It was playing cat and mouse with a squadron of our F-118s, one of our best jet airplanes that the Air Force has, the best. And that they're best the Top Gun team of flyers. They couldn't keep up with it, and it even guessed where their rendezvous point was going to be. It knew after they'd played cat and mouse with these guys, they were looking for it. They couldn't see it. They said, "Well, we're going to go back to the rendezvous point." And they were told by by the Princeton that, well, don't look now, but your object is waiting for you at your rendezvous point. And it was a secret location. They hadn't been talking about it on the radio, or hadn't been shared. But somehow or another, this object that looked like a 40-foot long Tic Tac candy, 40 by 20 foot Tic Tac candy, it was waiting for them.
That would be,
we're not alone, kids. I mean, disclosure happened. Disclosure has happened. I mean, if you're waiting for the president of the United States to go and say this, you're going to be waiting. It's not going to happen. The Pentagon told us that we're not alone. They told us that there are UFOs, that they are real, that they're not from Earth, that they have a science that is way far advanced from our own, and we're left in the dust by this science, that whoever they are, well, we hope they're friendlies, because if they're not, we're pretty much screwed.
Well, in 2016, Bigelow sold Skinwalker Ranch for $4.5 million, And this was to Adamantium Holdings, which is a shell corporation that nobody really knows the origin. So now after this purchase, all roads leading to the ranch were blocked. The perimeter secured, guarded by cameras and barbed wire, and surrounded by signs that aimed to prevent people from approaching the ranch. So in 2017, the name Skinwalker Ranch was filed for trademark through Justia Trademarks. Now, the trademark was issued in 2018. And then, in March of 2020, Brandon Fugel, he's a 46-year-old from the Utah real estate area, he's a tycoon out there, publicly became the owner of the ranch. So now, back in 2019, so we'll jump back a year, during the summer, Fugel joined up with the History Channel and several high-end scientists to bring a newer, or excuse me, he teamed up with several high-end scientists to bring a never-before-seen look into the ranch. So now this show started to air just recently back here in April, and it's called The Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch. So we're, what, about 6 episodes in, and there's been some crazy things that have happened. I mean, the part that really gets me is the one scientist that keeps having these medical issues where the skin starts lifting off the back of his scalp.
Right. There was the one gentleman there, too, was pointing out that it was almost consistent to, like, a ray, you know, like a radiation ray on the back of his head, which I thought was really interesting. That seems to be the thing kind of leading up to this last episode, that now they're finding, you know, harmful amounts of radiation, you know, on the property, and radiation can do so many detrimental things and make someone feel crazy, you know, physically, everything. So that was a very interesting thing that I thought too. But it's always the same guy. Whatever it is that's doing that likes him.
Or doesn't like
Thomas
him.
Winterton. Yeah, or doesn't Thomas like him. Winterton is the guy.
Yeah, Thomas.
It was hydrocephalus that he suffered from. And like immediate hydrocephalus, which doesn't happen. That's medically impossible for that to happen. But it happened. Twice.
Yeah. And the thing that I find really kind of interesting is if you look at his injuries and how it pulls the scalp off the back of his head, when they show the like the X-ray picture of it, take a look at the shape of his head when it's elongated. It's just like those elongated heads that they report to about when people see aliens.
Or like, you're right. I never thought of that.
You've heard like the stories of like the skeletons that they found, or you know, just the pictures that they've drawn of it. They have that elongated head, and it just kind of it's interesting. It makes you almost wonder if maybe they're doing it in a way to show, hey, maybe this is what we look like.
Maybe.
I mean, it could be. I mean, there's so many, you know, different things from the anomalies that are out there. You know, who knows what kind of message that they're trying to get across.
Yeah. Yeah. And then especially now, like the newer episodes, and I guess I probably should have given a spoiler at the beginning of the of our episode to say, hey, we're going to be discussing all these things that have happened. So if you haven't seen the show, cover your ears. Just make sure you...
It's too late. Too late. But we didn't really go in detail. We did. I'm very lucky. I actually got to have lunch with a few of these guys. I've met Jim Morse, who's the ranch manager. I've met Thomas Winterton, who had the weird hydrocephalus like, you know, damage done to his own skull. I met Bryant Arnold, who is the head of security for them, and there were a couple of other ranch hands, and I wasn't able to recognize them from the show, but I was a speaker over at AlienCon last year, and so when we went for lunch, we were in the green room, and I wound up sharing a table with those guys, and so I didn't know who they were. And we got talking, and all this came up, and it was the most interesting thing, you know. And I'll tell you something. These guys are just completely, totally on the level. You know, you'll meet some people, every now and then you'll meet someone where it's like, oh, this guy is just, you know, I don't know about this. I don't know about this person. This is far-fetched, and they seem like they're, you know, going for the almighty dollar. These guys were just, they were obviously completely, their lives were changed by this plot of land in Utah. You know, Thomas Winterton, who had the hydrocephalus like thing happen to his head, he's a good Mormon boy. You know, these guys are religious; they're good people, and they're not the types of folk that are going to make up stories. You know, they go home to their church and their families, and they don't really accept, you know, that kind of nonsense from people out there. Mm-hmm. This was a very real thing that they've all gone through. It's the phenomena, they've all experienced it, and it's changed their lives personally. And, you know, the only reason why I would even mention this is that it really truly made an impression on me. I was very impressed by just the veracity and the honesty and the candor of these guys sitting down and talking about the weirdness that they had all experienced. And these guys had never experienced any weirdness like this before. You know, it was just they were – you know, just churchgoers, just very, very normal guys. And for this to have happened to them, it was out of the left field. And I absolutely know that it's true. What they went through changed their lives forever. They'll never be the same.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing that I kind of feel bad about is Brian, you know, the head of security, I guess his nickname's Dragon. He's been getting a lot of grief online from people that are really obsessed with the show, or at least really obsessed with criticizing the show. They don't understand why he's so heavily protective of things, and he's always trying to shoot down ideas, and they talk about how it almost seems like he's blocking them from trying to have discoveries. But if you really kind of stop and look at it for a second, you know, Brandon put him there to protect everybody. Not only to protect the people, but to protect the property. Because, I mean, absolutely. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have $4.5 million to invest into a property. And if I did have it and invested in a property, you bet I'm going to make sure nothing happens to it or to anybody on it. So, I mean, I just think it's funny that they're trying to say, oh, he's hiding stuff, or he's trying to stop people. Well, he shouldn't have the authority. He's just a security guard. Well, no, he's not.
He's trying to keep people safe. He's trying to keep it real. And these guys know that there are those out there that have a propensity for taking this sort of thing and fictionalizing it and trying to, you know, turn it into something that's more than it is, which you don't have to do. I mean, Skinwalker Ranch is impressive on its own. Yeah. Right. You certainly don't need to embellish any of the stories that happen there. They're just very, very impressive. And there's something going on there. Enough to the point where, you know, we know that Bigelow spent all that money on that property. And now, you know, the new guy, Brandon Fugel, has spent the same, even more money for that property. But they're all looking for what is going on. They want to know the truth. And I think that it's in good hands there. From what I see, it couldn't be in better hands.
Oh, I completely agree. Now, two things about the show I wanted to bring up with you guys before we end the episode. The first one here we'll talk about. Well, I mean, there's so many topics in the show we could pick it apart all night. But the first one that I want your guys' thoughts on is the room in the basement. So for those of you that may not be familiar with what I'm talking about, in the caretaker's residence on the property, they're hearing all these weird noises and sounds and voices. They go down in the basement. They can't find nothing. they drill a hole in one of the walls, and they find a room. Now, this room is completely encased in concrete. All sides, top, bottom, all four walls. Inside the room, there's not a speck of dust. It's not dirty. It's perfectly clean, except for one pile of ashes that has bone fragments in it. And not just animal fragments. They're pretty sure they're human bone fragments. What the heck is up with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's very strange that there would be even, you know, a building there like that that's so pristine, almost, if you will, like a underground bunker of some kind, that maybe it was something for protection of some sort, or I don't know what to make of the bone fragments for sure. That's very strange. That, I mean, you don't really come across that really in any of the reports. You know, it's all kind of just outside, out and about. I do know when I was doing a little bit of my research that for a while between the Utes and the Navajos, they weren't always friendly with each other either. There was a lot of hostility too that would happen between both tribes. So maybe, you know, the fragments are something from the past that had to do with a tribal battle or disagreement at some point. Maybe it is just animal fragments. Who knows?
Yeah, well, and see, that's the weird thing with it is, you know, here in Iowa, and then south of us, like, you know, Missouri, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. Texas, I mean, even possibly into Utah, you know, we have Tornado Alley. So a lot of homes have essentially concrete bunkers in the basement to go for tornadoes. But with those, there's an entry point. So there's usually at least some kind of offset in the concrete wall that you kind of wiggle your way into it, or mm-hmm. not necessarily wiggle, but you kind of go into it, and then you're in your safe room. Well, this room didn't have any doors. So, like, literally, it looks like, and I mean, so here's my conspiracy theory on this, is I personally think this dates back to the Shermans. So I think this was one of them creatures that they were having problems with that they captured. And they put him down in there and burnt his body. And then they built the walls up around it to lock it in there. Or maybe they didn't burn it, but maybe they at least killed it, or at least confined it, and then sealed off that room. And then maybe it was something to do with the atmospheric conditions, with them not being from Earth. Or, I mean, I'm kind of going out into, like, Mel Gibson and Signs here, but, you know, flinging the water on them. But, you know, maybe it was something to do with the atmospheric conditions and it caused it to burst. You know, we've had many reports throughout the years of spontaneous combustion with things.
Absolutely. You know,
maybe that was something like that. But I think they confined it in there because there's no doors. The concrete's on the floor, the ceiling, all four walls. So I think that's what I think it is. And that's the only thing I can explain on why it's in just one pile.
Right. Very viable theory.
Yeah, it looks like they were hiding something there. Mm-hmm. You know? They were trying to keep it contained. Maybe they were afraid of it.
Yeah. It's almost kind of like vampires. You know how they would try to block them in or lock them into a thing so they couldn't get away. And
right, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how old the caretaker house is either. I mean, if it dates back into the Sherman time or if it's something new. I mean,
and that's what they were saying in the show too. I think some of the houses were a couple hundred years old. So, I mean, whatever history you have there that's aside from everything going on the property, it could play a part very well. I mean, it all plays some type of a part. I mean, you know, generally in a lot of these incidences too, you're going to be stressed out so much because as a human being, you know, things that we don't understand tend to, you know, scare us. And that causes a lot of tension and stress and almost kind of pits us against each other in a way because we don't know how to handle what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Now, the second thing here is, this is going to be right up your alley, Earl. I believe it was either the fourth episode or the fifth episode, they actually caught video of a UFO.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Wasn't it? They sent a rocket up, I think, to try to get some information, and it was intercepted by a UFO. And I saw the video, and it looked pretty intriguing. When we get videos of you know. When I get a video that's purported to be a UFO, I'm usually looking for something that's – because anything can be in the sky, right? Anything can look strange. A jet afterburner can look strange. But so you're usually looking for something that's doing things that our technology can't attain. Like if it shoots off into the atmosphere suddenly, we can't do that, right? Goes from one spot to 50 miles away suddenly, we can't do that. But then there's those reports that are incidental to other strange reports. And that's what this one was. It didn't really do anything out of the ordinary that, say, a balloon or a jet could have, you know, done. But the fact is that it was there and it shouldn't have been. And it was in response to them shooting up this rocket, trying to get more information. So, you know, they were either trying to get more information on us in that situation or else they were just kind of saying, hey, you know, yeah, we're here. We're watching you. And sure, you can have this information, but just remember, we're gathering the same on you. So don't get too cocky about it. And that was kind of the way it hit me, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't that the UFO had done anything out of the ordinary. It was just kind of hovering there where their rocket was. But, you know, we've had our rockets intercepted by UFOs before. We had one they sent up back in 1963 off the California coast off of Vandenberg. They sent up a rocket that was a test for an ICBM, and it was tracked by a UFO. They got it on film. It was a big deal, you know, and it sort of reminded me of that incident. You want to get ET's attention, do a test with the ICBM, something that could, you know, destroy another country or cause World War III. They're real interested in that stuff.
Right.
And then that's kind of what came to mind. And it reminded me of that. It seemed like the same kind of attitude of, oh, okay, you're checking us out with a rocket. Well, here's what we use, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it was perfect timing, too, when that happened. You know, there's the UFO, their first rocket test failed, and their second one that they sent up, you know, gave them beautiful data. So,
yeah, it was not, you know, I mean, you have to look at stuff like that. And coincidences, sure, they happen. But sometimes to just call something a coincidence like that is it takes more faith to believe that it was
right.
Just, you know, a coincidence than it was something intentional. And it seemed very intentional.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with it was, is it, you could obviously tell it looked metallic. It had that kind of metallic sheen to it when it wasn't obviously glowing.
Yeah.
But
it was reflecting sunlight.
Right. Know, right.
Like a mirror surface.
Yeah, exactly. And then the weird thing was, it just, like you said, it just kind of hovered there and then it vanished and then it reappeared in the exact same spot.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Yeah, and, I mean, my first thought when I saw it is, oh, that's probably somebody flying a drone.
Right.
That was my first thought, you know, because some of their aerial shots they have of the ranch, I'm like, maybe they just happened to confuse, like, the drone that they're filming with for the show, and was like, oh, that's a UFO.
But it disappeared and then reappeared.
Exactly, in the same spot.
Drones don't do that.
No, and if they do, I want that one.
Yeah, really.
So, but, yeah, that's what my first thought was. And then when it vanished and then came back, it's like, no, nope, I don't know what that is.
Right.
So.
That was interesting. I thought it was interesting. So, and I'm a hard sell on stuff like that. But
right.
Well, I encourage all of our listeners to go out and go on the History Channel and take a check out on the show, The Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch. It's they do a great job with it. I mean, they pull in some of the history to it. They also have all the scientific explanation. They have every freaking cool tool that you could use to investigate. I mean, ground-penetrating radar that, you know, it looked like a floor buffer, and the thing's out there scanning, you know, 30 feet into the ground and finding all this crazy dome structures and stuff. And, you know, that's a whole other topic we could get into. But, you know, take a look at the show. I mean, if this is something that interests you, take a look. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not getting paid to endorse the show, but, I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. And, I mean, don't just read about what people are saying about it. Actually take a look at it for yourself. You know, maybe it'll open your eyes up a little bit onto all the craziness that's around us that you don't realize. But thanks again to Anthony Holter from OC Ghosts and Legends, and thanks to Earl Grey from MUFON for being our guests on tonight's show. It was
thank you, Brandon.
Awesome having you guys on here. So we'll definitely have to get together again, like maybe at the season finale, so we can talk more about this.
Heck yeah, yeah, that would be fun.
Absolutely, 100%
agree. Great meeting you, Anthony. It was fun being back with our first show will be on, I guess, tomorrow or something.
Well, kind of. And you kind of spoiled the fun that I had coming up. But thanks to everybody for listening.
Just edit that.
Sorry. No, we're going to leave that in there. Thanks to all of you for tuning in as well. And like Earl was saying, we actually will be talking more with Earl on the next episode of the ParaUnity Podcast. So if you enjoyed everything that we were talking about tonight, make sure you tune in to hear all about how he got started in ufology. And then he also goes into a lot of detail about the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. So if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to leave us a 5 stars or give us a review. This will help us get the word out about the show, and we want to hear your feedback to help make the show better. So if you're an Android listener, you can follow us on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or Google Podcasts, so you never miss an episode. And remember, if you like the show, tell a friend. So you can find us on any podcast directory. My name is Brandon, and you've been listening to the best place to bring our paranormal teams a little closer together, the ParaUnity Podcast.